Hello, everyone. Thank you for watching The Naturalist Capitalist, and I'm your host, Reed Coverdale. And as usual, we're full of technical difficulties at the moment because I'm on the road, but you guys are used to that, so we'll make it somehow. I'm very excited to have Misty Wilson on the other end. Winston
right.
on the other end. And I got to do a show with her, I don't know, about a month ago. And she was willing to go on with Ryan Dawson, which any left-leaning person who's willing to go on with Ryan Dawson and deal with the backlash of that, I would love to have on my show. So, Misty, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so I've been following you for, I think, about a year on Twitter. I'm new to Twitter. I've only been around for about a year. And I really... I'm friends with Dak Rouleau, who I think you know or you've met. Mm-hmm. And he was obviously really big into the Assange movement. And that's how I found out about you. But I've been following you for about a year, and I've noticed we have a lot of the same big concerns about things. And this was something that I didn't really realize until 2019 that people on the left and libertarians really do care about a lot of the same core issues. I didn't realize how deep it went. I mean, I knew that, you know, when it came to war and then some civil liberties issues, that we were kind of on the same page. But I realized it goes way deeper. It goes into criminal justice reform, goes into prison reform, goes into, protecting whistleblowers, goes into ousting government corruption. And a lot of people look at us as polar opposites, but I feel like I have more in common with progressives than I do with conservatives.
Ooh, I hate that word, Reed Coverdale. I hate that word. Progressive,
sure.
Such a dumb word. Nancy Pelosi calls herself progressive. So first of all, I don't like labels at all to begin with. I feel
right.
like putting people in boxes is really dumb. It's a real quick way to put yourself into a team, and then it becomes a team sport, and then you can't talk to anybody outside your team. And that's the position we kind of find ourselves in now. I think we do agree on a lot of stuff. I think that a lot of people in our groups are very hesitant to recognize that fact. They don't want to. It's an ego thing. We can't agree with those people. Fuck that. I'll agree with anybody who wants to help me get stuff done. You know?
Yeah.
I can get along with anybody. If you want to end wars, I can get along with you.
Yeah, I sometimes wish that I hadn't branded myself as a libertarian, because even though I am a libertarian, and I'm a very anti-state person, and all the facets of the ideology I do agree with, but I hate putting myself in that group because, like you said, people instantly assign characteristics to you that might not be true just because they met someone else who also
yes.
called themselves that. And it's just an endless problem. So do you, I didn't mean to label you by that, that way. Sorry.
It's okay.
Like, do you, is it hard to not label yourself and also find
impossible
people
because
agree
that's
with you,
how, that's how society's set up. You have to label, like in everything, you have to label yourself. I don't like doing it. I mean, I've always kind of, just said leftist, but even that doesn't even fit really. It doesn't, I mean, I don't, there's because I have some libertarian takes. I have some, you know what I mean? Like there's not like any one ideology that I agree with 100%. And so I don't come at this like from theory. My theory's great. You should read it. But I come at it more from like a common sense viewpoint. And so like, I just want to talk through the issue and just come to like a common sense conclusion. And it doesn't have to have a label. So I've always kind of just used like the blanket term leftist, but even that feels weird now. It's like, it doesn't really, because a lot of people call themselves leftist who I don't find any much in common with them. Do you know what I mean? Like they're like AOC claims to be leftist and she's an imperialist. So I don't identify with her as a leftist at all. So yeah, labels have always been kind of messy for me. I don't like it.
Yeah. Especially the left and right labels, because I can get along with someone who would be on the left, but they're very anti-authoritarian. If I mean like an anarcho-communist and I are not going to have any quarrels because we might be different, but we're not going to be interfering with each other's lives at all. Where if you're trying to find your identity on the right or the left, it becomes kind of, it gets messy because there's a middle line there, and then you have the up and down too. And so you could have someone who's as right-leaning as you are, but way more authoritarian than you are. Or you could have someone who's kind of centrist, who's still technically a right-winger, but doesn't agree with you on you much. So that the left-right dichotomy, just that's the worst one.
Well, and in my opinion, that's a very intentional thing. Like that's a very, it's been very intentionally set up that way because it's very easy to divide you in, like I said earlier, teams, and then everything becomes about my, and you see it now. I mean, like you watch Democrats excuse things that Joe Biden does that are 100 times worse than anything Donald Trump did, but they'll make excuses for it. And then the right did the same thing with Donald Trump. He promised the moon. He didn't do shit. And everybody, you know, just kind of let him walk away with that. And, you know, if my team does it, it's fine. If your team does it, it's bad. And that's, it's like this kind of playground mentality. And it's really boring and stupid. Self-defeating.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree. So what has your political journey been like? How long have you been?
Oh, last year. Technical difficulties.
Oh, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Lost you for a second.
Sorry about that. No, that's okay. What's your political journey been like? When did you get involved? And like, where were you when you first got involved? And how have you moved along as you?
So, I was always kind of like politically aware, I would say, but I've never believed really in electoral politics. I would say probably around, I guess, Obama. I heard Obama speak and he's very charismatic. He played a good game. Like his cosplay was impressive. And so I was cautiously optimistic about him and about what that could mean for the country. And so I voted for Barack Obama in 2008. By 2009, I saw exactly who he was and realized that he was in the pocket of Wall Street. And I moved on. And so in 2012, I voted third party. And then Bernie came along. I had known who Bernie was since the 2003 Alan Greenspan SmackDown. If you haven't seen that, you should go watch it. It's really good. I mean, even if you don't like Bernie Sanders, watching him SmackDown Alan Greenspan is kind of amazing. But I was like, wow, who's that guy? I've never heard anybody talk like that. So I kind of knew who he was. And, you know, when he ran, I was like, okay, well, maybe we'll see if he can. So I supported him and like went to rallies and phone banked and all that good stuff. And then, you know, he walked off the field without fighting for his supporters. I mean, WikiLeaks showed the whole world that he was cheated. Everybody knows it, and he won't even talk about it. And I was done then. I mean, I've never really been one who believed in electoral politics anyway. It was that kind of succession of, I kind of was like, okay about Obama, saw who he was, decided to just vote third party, was cautiously optimistic about Bernie. And then I was like, okay, I was right the first time. Electoral politics is bullshit. And I was done. And so now I just focus mostly on activism and mutual aid and stuff like that. I don't know if that answers your question, but
no, it does. And I think the whole Bernie thing is kind of funny because I was never into him at all. But I guess I sort of knew he was a fraud from the start. I was just not. I looked at his voting record and saw the imperialism that he'd.
Oh, yeah. I knew who he was, but I was still like, I thought maybe we can like take a little bit of this back the other way. Because we've been slipping very, very quickly into authoritarianism. And so I was like, maybe this will like wake some people up. We can get like a jolt of energy. But he is a very loyal Democratic soldier.
So do you think he actually sparked a movement, or do you think he subverted a bunch of people to doing what the Democrats want?
I think he sparked a phony movement. He sparked a phony movement and convinced a lot of people that they were in a movement, only to siphon them back into the corrupt, to the core Democratic Party and back into the corrupt system of electoral politics. So a lot of people want to give him credit. Oh, but he opened a conversation. A conversation doesn't do anything for anybody. I don't care that, you know, oh, well, he got Medicare for All. Okay, the fact that Medicare for All is now like a mainstream media talking point is thanks in large part to a shit ton of activists over decades who have been fighting for that. And so just to give that all that credit to Bernie Sanders makes me angry anyway, just as an activist. But I mean, it's, you know, what he did is really, he damaged any real like uprising of people, I think.
Yeah, I mean,
he made people complacent.
Yeah, that's how I've felt about him. And I've gotten in a lot of arguments with people about that.
Me too.
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, he's the, I think even Tucker Carlson did a video about how Bernie's the saddest revolutionary that's ever existed. I mean, when even Tucker Carlson sees it, you're pretty transparent.
Yeah. I mean, just the fact that he even uses the word, like, we need a revolution. Shut up. Oh, it's honestly, like, you could get me really fired up about Bernie Sanders. I despise him. He is terrible. The fact that he, you know, took a bunch of money from hardworking people who don't have it. Like, when I volunteered for him in 2016, I met people who were skipping meals to send him money. And he wasn't in it to win it. He wasn't, this was never something that he ever thought he was ever going to actually do. He lied to people. He gaslit people. I call him Gaslight McSheepdog now. That's his new name. So,
yeah.
I mean, I have no love for Bernie Sanders whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, we certainly agree on that. and I mean, I feel sorry for his sincere supporters who
I do too.
Believed in him. And I mean, it hurt to watch them because, especially this last year, because they must have missed 2016 and his voting record, you know, back to the
90s. I felt a little less bad this time around, though, because if you didn't see it the first time, yeah. You know, I still feel bad for you, but come on.
So many of them were like, when did he sell out or when did he change? And I was like, he didn't change. He's the same guy he's always been. He's just, you know, he's just showing his cards better now.
Yeah, definitely.
But, yeah. Do you think that's just going to happen with politicians? I mean, that's kind of what I've realized. I mean, the only reason I'm involved with politics at all is because I think that it's the only way we can draw attention to what's going on. I mean, I feel like if we're just doing activism, just writing books, just going on shows, people aren't going to pay attention. In America here, it seems like people only pay attention to you if you run for something, specifically if you run for president. That's the only way anyone ever seems to learn about anything. But do you think, it seems to me, no matter how good of a person you have, once you get them into a position of power, unless they want to do nothing but dismantle that system, they're going to be compromised at some point. I mean, it doesn't seem like people are able to resist power.
Well, I mean, one of two things will happen to you if you get elected. You will either play ball or you will get tossed out. They will find a way to get you out. And so it's very apparent. Like, once you get in there and you immediately, like, the fact that AOC is still in there, it shows that she's just playing ball. I mean, that's, you know what I mean? It's like that kind of a thing. I think the system is so completely and irretrievably broken that it doesn't matter who you elect inside that system. It's corrupt to its core. It doesn't work. It needs to be dismantled entirely. But people aren't ready for that conversation at all, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I personally think that electoral politics is a ginormous waste of time. I think locally, if you have like some ballot initiatives or something on a local level, I think that it makes sense to go and vote for those things, or even like your school board, that can make a difference in your community. But I think that like on a federal, even state level, you're wasting your time.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with you as far as actually getting people in to make changes. I just think that the national state age is where people pay attention. You know, they never care about your ideas or about the issues at hand unless you run something for something big. It seems, I mean, I could be wrong, but it seems like
what you're saying makes sense. But it's also, are they actually getting the real message that you're trying to get across? You know what I'm saying? Because I mean, the mainstream media in this country is 100% state propaganda. So you're even if you're able to talk about a certain issue or topic, you're only going to be able to talk about it within the acceptable parameters of mainstream media. Otherwise, you're not going to get on that show. And so again, it just becomes like, how much are you going to beat your head against the same wall? I don't fault people for wanting to like be involved in electoral politics. I'm friends with people who are running for office right now. If that's what you choose to do, I'm not telling you what to do. Just for me, yeah. I'm not wasting my time there anymore.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us a bit about what you've done for activism? I know you've done a lot for Julian Assange, but what else have you done?
I mean, prior to like 2008, I was more of like a mutual aid person. For 5 years, I ran a local group here in my community where it really started as just a joke. I posted on like one of those like community Facebook pages, like the buy sell trades or whatever, that, you know, I have, my kids are spoiled and I'm like, I have a ton of toys. And a lot of them are like new, like have never been touched. And so if anybody needs help with like Christmas, it was around Christmas time, let me know and I'll, you know, we can hook up and get the stuff to you. And it snowballed really fast. It turned into a whole like a community page. We helped people with Christmas presents. We helped people pay their bills, groceries, diapers, whatever. And I ran that for 5 years. And then just with young kids and stuff, it was a lot to take on and I just needed a break from it. But that was right around the time I think that like the whole like Obama stuff. No, that, it was after that. This was more like towards the time of like Bernie running, I think, because I started it. My oldest was born in 2008. And I started it around that time. So yeah, it was. I was more of like a mutual aid person. And then I really just from having kids, I was kind of off the radar for a while. And then got involved with like WikiLeaks stuff and was kind of just like a casual supporter, you know, bought merch and donated, talked about it to my friends, all that stuff. And, you know, supported other groups who were doing a lot of activism work, like Unity for Jay, people like that. And then, but once he got arrested, it was, you know, it was like full on for me. That was it became very clear that this was like incredibly dangerous. And that's really when I got like super involved in the Julian Assange stuff.
Yeah, so have you traveled internationally for this, or how
I
in-depth
have
has it
not
been?
traveled internationally, no. I mean, I've been to DC multiple times and I'm going to go to Denver in August and things like that, but I have not traveled internationally. I would love to, but COVID also hit, you know, a little over a year ago. Nobody's really able to travel. I would love to go to London. The London crew, the activists there that support Julian Assange are some of the most dedicated and amazing activists I've ever known. And I would love nothing more than to be able to go and protest with them one day. But yeah, I mean, with COVID and everything, nobody's really been traveling much. So not yet.
Yeah, so with the Julian Assange activism, it seems like since that's a single issue deal that you probably have people from all over the political spectrum that you work with, right? It's not just one
Absolutely.
group.
Yes, absolutely. It's that's one of my favorite things about Assange activism is that it is people from across the political spectrum. And like I said earlier, if you want to help me get something done, I care about this greatly, like deeply. I think free speech is that's it. It's the front line. That I think the war over information is the front line for everything else that we're dealing with. We can't even, I mean, Julian Assange just said this himself. No political ideology has it right because none of them are dealing with the facts. And everything is hidden from us, and there's no accountability for people in power. And until we have that and we're dealing with reality, there's no way we can even begin to have conversations about, you know, economic theory or whatever. You know, it's silly to even go that far. So to me, this is just the most important issue that we're facing. You know, and if Julian Assange is extradited, that essentially gives the United States global jurisdiction over information and journalism. Which should terrify everyone. So yeah, I mean, that's why it's been so important to me. That's why I got kind of like really involved and heavily involved once he was arrested, because that seemed like a game-changing moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool seeing people work together who don't have the same ideology, because I think what's really dangerous is that we'll look at people who have different ideas than us and we'll just categorize them as evil. And that's really dangerous because you know, I'm an individualist. I want to go talk to every single person and hear their own story, hear why they think what they think, and then have a conversation with them about it. This whole otherizing thing that we do, it's really dehumanization. And once you start dehumanizing people that disagree with you, you know, that leads you down a road that we don't want to go down. I mean, it's never worked out well before.
No, definitely not. And to me, it's really silly. you know, I live in small town Ohio. I'm surrounded by people that don't agree with me. I live in Trump country. You know what I mean? I'm not a Trump supporter by any stretch of anybody's imagination. But I can, they're not bad people. It's really, really ridiculous. Like this whole, I get in a lot of trouble because I have talked to like Magnus. And I have, you know, I have talked to people that I don't agree with and that I, you know, that have done things that maybe, I mean, I was on a show with Ryan Dawson. I'm not afraid of that. I don't agree with Ryan Dawson on a lot of things. That's okay. I was on a show with him where we agreed on Palestine, and that's an important issue to me. That means a lot to me. And so if I can work with somebody who maybe we have disagreements about other things, I care more about Palestine than my ego. You know, I don't care if there are things that I don't agree with Ryan Dawson on. That just doesn't matter to me. And so it seems really self-destructive. To me, this is like one of my major issues with people on the left. They all do this whole platforming thing and, oh, you talk to people you don't agree with. Well, of course I do. Do you want to get things done, or do you want to sit in your safe space and feel smugly superior? Because that's what you're doing. You're just isolating yourself. And how are you going to change anybody's minds if you won't even have a conversation? It doesn't make sense. So, I mean, that's always been my position. I'm not afraid to talk to anybody. Like conversations are how things happen and how things change. And we can disagree on everything. But if you want to help me free Julian Assange, for example, welcome aboard. I'm happy to have you.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is, if you are not willing to talk with people who disagree with you, that says more about you than it says about the people that you don't want to talk with. It really points to an intellectual weakness that you have, that you're not, either you're not willing to test your ideas, you don't want to actually.
It's an insecurity.
Yeah.
I think it's an insecurity. Like, people will always say, oh, well, Magnus is just trying to infiltrate the left. Okay, well, I know who I am. I know what I stand for. Magnus is going to have to work pretty damn hard to change who I am. He's not infiltrating my thoughts and my belief system. Are you so like insecure in your own personal beliefs that you can't have a conversation with somebody who may challenge them? I feel okay about where I sit on all my issues. And I'm happy to be challenged on stuff. I mean, there are things that I've changed my mind about in like recent years. I used to be very, very, very pro gun control. I around Sandy Hook, I had a 7-year-old, and that was first graders were all, and that like emotionally, I had like an emotional reaction, and I I'm human, you know, and I, you know, was very staunchly pro gun control. And then I listened to people. I listened to people from, in particular, communities of color. And I realized that that's not a position that it makes any sense. And I changed my mind when I was presented with information that was contradictory to my beliefs. I changed my mind. And that's, you know, I think that should be like a welcome thing. You should be okay with having your thoughts challenged, and be open to being wrong. It's not like a bad thing to be wrong or to change your opinion. It shouldn't be anyway.
No, yeah, I totally agree there. And, you know, I want to talk with people who are looking for what's true. I don't really want to, I don't care what theory you've read and, you know, what dogma you've memorized, if you're not actually trying to find what's true. If you found something that's comforting, good for you, I guess, but I don't really care. Like, I don't want to hear something that sounds good or, you know, makes me feel good about myself. I want to find something that sounds like this person actually knows what's going on. This person actually knows how to fix this stuff. That's what I'm interested in. So I don't care if you disagree with me on everything. I'd rather talk to someone who literally disagrees with me on everything, but is actually looking for what's true and has an open mind, than someone who will say they agree with me on everything, but isn't actually thinking through it and has just accepted it at face value and just taken it on.
Or worse, people who say that they agree with you and then do the opposite.
right.
You know what I mean? Like politicians do all the time. Yeah. But yeah, I've always said that I can deal with any honest actor. If you come at me in an honest way and you genuinely believe the things that you're saying, I don't deal well with, you know, grifters and charlatans and all, like fake people who have an agenda and they, you know, they know that the things that they're saying are crap and they're just trying to get attention. I don't deal well with that. But if you're like an honest person and you're coming at me in a real way, I can deal with just about anybody. You know, again, I grew up in small town Ohio. I'm surrounded by, you know, just like regular everyday middle Americans. I've dealt with all different kinds of people. And it's not that hard just to have like a civil conversation with another human being.
Yeah, no, I totally, I mean, my family is mostly Republicans, and then the other side of the family is mostly Democrats, and I get along with them fine. I love all of them. I mean, this idea that you're just supposed to stick with your ilk and only talk to them and only relate to them, it's ridiculous. And not only does it impede any progress toward changing anyone else's minds, but I mean, what a shallow person you're going to be if you're not willing to love people who don't agree with you on everything. You know, I mean,
Oh my gosh.
It's just so
people
pathetic.
Who like disowned family members over who they voted for. Are you kidding me? That makes me sad. That really makes me sad. I cannot imagine. I mean, I have people in my family who voted for, Biden, who I cannot stand, and for Trump, who I cannot stand. And I'm not going to disown them for that. That's so sad to me. Especially when you consider the fact that we're the most propagandized country on planet Earth. And so a lot of these people are just, they just don't have the facts. They just don't know what's happening. They watch CNN, they watch Fox News, they watch MSNBC. They have no clue what's actually happening in the world. And, you know, they just need to be talked to. It's not saying that's easy. It's hard to break through propaganda. It's really incredibly difficult, especially in this country. They're very good at it. But I can't imagine disowning a family member over politics.
Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. So, it's funny. We both have the same common enemy right now, which is the state. And we both want to see the state diminished from what it is now. So I just want to hear, what does that look like in your mind? And by the way, aside from, you know, I'm still interested in, electoral politics just for the platform, just like getting the message out there. But I do agree with you that the presidency is a joke. Congress is a joke. To me, it's like state level and below is the only place you can really make a difference by actually getting someone in to do something. So I just want to hear, how do you envision success going forward? Just changing the way people think, getting them to live a different way, and then disregarding the state and moving on? Or what does it look like in your mind?
To me, that's what makes the most sense, is to start building something outside the system, so that it's in place. Because I think a large part of getting people on board is that we don't know any different. And that's another thing that really depresses me. I feel like the American populace has let themselves get beat down to the point where this is acceptable. Like, we've normalized this, like, just horrendous nightmare of a country. I mean, people are suffering and dying. They can't find jobs. You know what I mean? It's just, it's not working. It's not working. But nobody knows what else to do. And I think that's a big part of it. It's just like this fear of the unknown. So I think if we can start building something outside of the system, that's why I constantly talk about mutual aid. Learn to grow food, learn to sew, learn to hunt, learn to fish, learn to whatever you can do. To like find like a useful thing that you can do. You know what I'm saying? Fix cars, whatever it is, build stuff, whatever it is. We're going to need those people. Here's the thing. The empire is failing. Period. End of story. It's happening. We're living in the middle of it. And so we can either be ready or we cannot. And I would rather be ready. And so, I feel like it's an inevitability. That's a hard word.
Yeah,
it is. I feel a little drunk when I say it. I'm not. Inevitability. but I feel like we're just too far gone at this point. It's going to happen. And so to me, building something outside the system so that we can take care of each other is, because nobody's coming to save us.
Yeah,
no,
well, that
government
all...
official.
No, yeah. I mean, that all sounds exactly like what I would say, is that we need to forget the system, take care of each other, learn to hunt, learn to sew. I mean, yeah, that's exactly what I've been saying. I mean, that's agorism, basically, like just not taking part in the system and trying to help each other out. So do you envision a state reemerging after this one falls, or after we get to a point where we're living harmoniously? Like, I mean, I know a lot of leftists believe in building the state up to where we can equalize and then diminish the state afterward. But what you're talking about is really what I talk about too, is like, I mean, if we're going to diminish the state, we might as well diminish the state and not be involved with it. So yeah. What does that look like to you?
No, I think the people, I mean, power to the people. People should be in charge. I mean, that's the way that it should be. Completely. We talk about democracy. That's what it should be. It should be the people in charge, the people having the power. We don't need no gods, no masters. We don't need it. You know, we can figure things out in a different way. I think that having, you know, the state as we know it now is not an option. And if it's going to fail, why would we go back to that? That's silly. So yeah, I think that we can definitely find a way to make things. And listen, I'm not saying I have all the answers. I'm not smart enough to know how to build that up. I'm just a mom from Ohio. But that's just to me, like the common sense answer. What we have doesn't work. So why would we go back? And if, I mean, like you said, if the way that it ends is that it ends, then why? There's no way that I could justify saying to go back to that to then, you know. So no, I guess that's a long answer for no.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I hate about libertarians and leftists talking to each other is that they get caught up in this huge battle over semantics when I think they actually agree economically in a lot of ways that they don't think they do. Like, I'm sure you and I hate almost all of the same entities, but I love capitalism, and I know from following you that you hate capitalism, but I don't think we're even necessarily talking
about the same thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, what do you think of the Federal Reserve, the IRS, you know, like giant corporations? I don't feel like you're in love with any of those things, right?
No.
And, I mean, what do you think about voluntary interactions with money between people? Is that something that you're okay with, or?
I mean, anything voluntary, I think, is fine. I just don't like people being forced into a system that's, you know, was created to destroy them. You know, but self-determination, that's my thing. Like, I want a world of self-determination. Whatever it is you want to do that makes you happy, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, you go do your thing, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's what I want too. you know, I think, I mean, we don't live in a, we don't live in a free country, really. We don't live in a, we certainly don't live in a free, a free market at all. I mean, it's so rigged. I mean, when Bernie would talk about how it's rigged for the 1%, I would agree with him. I mean, he'd be right. You know, like it's not a fair system. It's not everybody who has something to add to the system that people want will get a fair shake. It's like once you're in with the big dogs, you don't have to worry about anything anymore. The state's going to take care of you. They're going to bail you out if you make bad decisions. They're going to protect you if you destroy the environment, even though the Environmental Protection Agency is supposed to be there to protect the environment, you know. So, I mean, it's just like this huge game of big government and big business protecting each other. And then everyone else at the bottom is just screwed. And if they're lucky, they know somebody, or if they're just so good at producing something, they might make it up with the big guys. But for the average person, it's really hard and you're just fucked from day one.
And they're making it even more difficult for anybody to be, I mean, even almost have a chance to be successful. I mean, they're widening that gap just really, really quickly. I mean, if we just look at like the CARES Act and the unbelievable transfer of wealth that was, we're being robbed. That's what I mean when I say that, like, it makes me sad that we've normalized this and we've like, this is acceptable to us. We're being robbed. I mean, the fact that we are allowing these, you know, this couple handfuls of like really disgusting billionaires to take everything from us makes me really angry. You know, there should be no starving children in the United States of America. That's just not acceptable. There certainly should be no billionaires on planet Earth if there is a child starving. That just doesn't make any sense. Why wouldn't you want to take care of each other? That's what I find so troublesome. I was hugely impacted by Carl Sagan. And like the pale blue dot and the fact that we all have this like chance. I'm going to get a little philosophical here. I'm sorry. We've all been given like this really amazing gift, I guess. Like, and I'm an atheist. I don't really believe in God, but, you know, we've all been given this, we're given like, you know, if we're lucky, maybe 90 years on this planet. And I don't understand why you would not want to spend that time making sure that your neighbors are okay and that kids are not starving. And, you know, and I'm not saying I don't expect like a utopia. It's never going to be perfect. But the idea that I'm some like crazy hippie commie freak for wanting to lessen the suffering in the world is sad. Like, it makes me sad for humanity that, you know, we still find it acceptable to blow people up to steal their resources. And that's just a normal thing that we, and in fact, we cheer it on. If a politician needs like an approval rating boost and they go to war, they'll get it. That's sad. That's sick to me. Yeah. So, I mean, to me, you can, I guess you can call me like a crazy hippie if you want to, but I just would like to have a world where, you know, there is less suffering. I mean, well, I don't think that sounds crazy.
you got to call me a crazy hippie too, then, if that's the qualifier for wanting a world with less suffering. sorry, I lost you there.
Oh, that's all right.
The thing I don't think a lot of people understood about the last year is how much the state enriched the upper class. I mean, you had all these lockdowns, and then you had all these bailouts simultaneously. And I don't think a lot of people were paying attention, like you said, in the CARES Act, where the money was going. There were a few of us who were actually reading the bills and seeing who was receiving all the money. You know, I remember this bill that passed right before Christmas where it was $2.4 trillion, and each person got $600 if you qualified. I don't think I even qualified for that one.
I didn't.
It was ridiculous. And, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars going to corporations, going to overseas governments. And, you know, I was just like, I gave up on government around the end of the year, you know, because I've been a minarchist for a while. I believed in small government. But after that, I was just like, why do we have this here? What is it doing for us? It's supposed to protect us. It's supposed to, you know, be a referee and make sure that everything's fair. There's nothing fair about this. I mean, we're getting raped and all the proceeds are going to the top. And so, I mean, I just kind of gave up on the whole thing after I saw that. And I don't think people were realizing, like, how unnatural all that was and how rigged the system was going to billionaires. And
we're getting screwed. People have no idea. I don't think it's we're not even feeling the full effects of that yet. And that's going to hit a lot of people, and it's going to hit a lot of people really hard. But you know, you said that people just aren't aware of it. That's also by design. How could you possibly be aware of it? I mean, people have to work 2 to 3 jobs. They have kids. They have to take them to soccer practice and dance class. And you got to mow your grass, and you got to go grocery shopping, get your oil changed, and all this shit. And they just keep you so busy that you can't pay attention to what's going on. And then when you do have an opportunity to sit down and try to educate yourself, you turn on mainstream media and they're going to propagandize the crap out of you. And you're going to get disinformation and misinformation. You're going to get lied to. And so even when you think that you're, you know, jumping on Rachel Maddow or Tucker Carlson for 30 minutes a day, the only time that you have to try and inform yourself as a citizen, you're being lied to. You're being completely, you know, misled. And it's unfortunate. I think media is one of the most dangerous things in this country right now. And, you know, that's it. I just don't know how we get people away from that, because they've just really been beaten down to a point where they don't even have time to try to be involved in what's happening in their lives. And so as much as I want to be angry at people for not being informed, because I do feel like some of it is willful ignorance, it's also I have like a lot of compassion for those people, because I realize that it's difficult to I'm going to say deprogram, but that's going to sound, you know, I'm going to get all kinds of shit for using that word, but it's difficult to deprogram yourself. Just to recognize the fact that everything that you thought you knew is a lie, that's a big step. Like, that's a lot to take on. That's heavy. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of where, that's why I am so passionate about, you know, narrative control, narrative management, propaganda, all that stuff, because I feel like that's the first battle for me.
Yeah, and it's not just that they're not the great people that we're taught they are while we're growing up. It's not that they're just not benevolent and amazing and heroic and, you know, scholars of constitutional justice or whatever, they're actually like the worst people on planet Earth. That's,
yes,
I mean,
we elevate the worst among us to positions of power. Seriously, they're psychopaths. That's not hyperbolic. You cannot reach that level of power and not be a bad person. You just can't. You know, people still try to tell me, oh, well, Bernie's a good guy. No, he's not. He took a bunch of money from people who didn't have it, knowing he wasn't going to fight for them. And then he gaslit them for a war criminal and tries to pretend like Joe Biden's a good dude. Joe Biden's not a good dude. If you're calling Joe Biden your good friend, you need better friends.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. But I mean, he's better than most of them, which is the scary thing. Like, a lot of them, I mean, they just get so much worse. And yeah. I'm reading Scott Horton's book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terror. And, you know, even the narrative that, oh, these wars are for good intentions and they just backfire. I mean, that's bullshit. You start realizing, like, why we actually got involved in some of these countries and how we actually trained terrorist groups to do a lot of the horrible things they do. And I don't know. I mean, I understand why people don't want to know the truth because it's seriously disturbing.
It's not just uncomfortable or disappointing.
Like it overhauls your view on life. It's like, wow, yes. George.
And
Bush
once you know,
yeah.
Once you know, you can't unknow. And that's the problem. I say that all the time because there are times that I wish I could go back to not knowing these things that I know. Legitimately, it's really difficult to know that your country is, arming, funding, and training terrorists, and overthrowing democratically elected governments, and committing genocide, and starving children, those are all things that are happening. Not only that, but they're lying to you about it the whole time. They're lying you into wars. They're hiring the daughters of ambassadors to come and testify to Congress that she saw babies being thrown from incubators so that they can manufacture consent for a war. I mean, these people are despicable. Whatever you think they're doing that a million times worse. Thank you, WikiLeaks, for exposing a lot of that because it's really frustrating to me that people don't, most of the time they don't even know what's in WikiLeaks. They've never gone to the website. They've never checked out what's involved. They know collateral murder maybe, but they don't know really anything else. WikiLeaks has exposed so much corruption. I would venture to say more than all other journalists combined, all other publications combined. It's incredible the wealth of information that is available on WikiLeaks, and people just ignore it. Again, because I think they just don't want to know. You're right. They just don't want to know. It's hard. To come to that realization, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, I kind of take a two-pronged approach to it. I mean, sometimes I just go for the in-your-face messaging because some people just need to be shocked out of, to be deprogrammed. And then some people, you've got to work them in slowly. You know, you can tell that they're headed in the right direction and it's just going to take a while to get them there. But what about you? How have you been successful with that? Do you just kind of try one form of messaging and just throw it against the wall and see how it works? Or do you try a bunch of different things?
No, I think you're right. It really is dependent upon, the situation. It's dependent upon the person that you're speaking to. It depends on the format. Are you online? Are you in person? Are you over the phone? You know what I mean? Like are you at an action? We had a woman who we just had an action for Julian Assange in Columbus, Ohio, just recently. And we had a woman who was just walking by and was curious and came up and started talking to us. So, I mean, every circumstance, I think, you have to kind of play to your audience. I mean, for example, when I'm doing Assange activism and I'm reaching out to Republicans or people who are right leaning, I change the way that I speak. I'll use words like freedom and civil liberties. And you know what I mean? Like those are things that you have to kind of know your audience and just know who you're speaking to and try to, engage them in a way that works for them. You have to meet people where they are. I mean, and I'm not saying I'm perfect at doing that. There are plenty of times that I just lose my cool and just go off. And I mean, I'm very hot-headed, especially when it comes to stuff like Julian Assange. I have very little patience. But it's, you have to do the best that you can, I think, to just kind of meet people where they're at and figure out the best way that you can get them to your side. Again, if you care about your issue, that should be the way you're approaching it, because if you want to get something done, that's the way you do it.
Yeah. Yeah, how many politicians supported Assange? There was Tulsi and Ron
Tulsi.
Paul and Massey, right? And that was like it.
Yeah.
Like nobody else. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Tulsi Gabbard took a huge risk coming out in support of Julian Assange. I appreciate her greatly. I have plenty of issues with Tulsi Gabbard, but I am extremely appreciative that she had the courage to speak out for Julian Assange. I mean, if we're talking former politicians, Sarah Palin came out to his defense, which was...
Yeah, that's true.
I had no idea what was happening. I was like, I thought, for a second, I thought I was getting punked. Like, it was like she like teamed up with The Onion or something and was like punking me. And I'm like, is this real? And she's legit. I guess. I mean, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt that she's legitimate. But if you would have told me 5 years ago that Sarah Palin would come to Julian Assange's defense before Bernie Sanders, I would have laughed in your face. Bernie Sanders won't even say his name. Such a cuck. Ugh. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, that was amazing. That was one of those... I think that was still in 2020 when she did that. And it was just one of those things that wasn't on my 2020 bingo card was Sarah Palin coming out in defense of Julian Assange. It was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But
it was pretty amazing.
So it seems to me like nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows anything about him who's not politically involved. Is that pretty true? Or do you find that a lot of people have heard his name and think he's a criminal or?
So, those are usually the two people that I come across. I usually come across people who are like, who? And then come across people like, oh, he's a rapist, or he's a Russian, or he's a hacker, or he's a whatever. They've done so. If anybody's genuinely interested in propaganda and how it works, I highly recommend examining the case of Julian Assange and the decade-long smear campaign that's been lobbied against him, because it's really, really impressive. So, I mean, they really have done like a great job of making this like comic book villain out of him. And mainstream media never talks about it, which I think is very telling. Forget the fact that it's one of their own. Like it's, well, he's actually a journalist. They're, you know, not. But forget the fact that it's a journalist and that this impacts the future of their profession. This is a story. It's a massive story. This is a historic court case. This will be the first time that a journalist is charged under the Espionage Act. And not only that, he's an Australian. He isn't even an American citizen. WikiLeaks isn't an American company. They've never been an American company. He's never lived in the United States. It is crazy to me that we think that, you know, we have the right to charge somebody else under our laws, but then also he's not afforded the protections of our laws under the Constitution. They said that the First Amendment doesn't apply to him. So it's really, it's like this, we want our cake and we want to eat it too. And that's scary. So the fact that mainstream media never talks about this is very telling. It's a story. There's no excuse. And forget just mainstream media too, independent media. It's like pulling teeth to get independent media to talk about Julian Assange. I have had to like beg people. We've had to like badger people into it. For example, Secular Talk, Kyle Kalinske, we had to like badger him for weeks. And then he did like an 8-minute video. TYT, my dear friend, Glory Jones, popped into their super chat and said, hey, why aren't you covering Julian Assange? And maybe it wasn't big on libertarian Twitter, but leftist Twitter went crazy. Cause she said, we'll look into it.
It's like 10
years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Crazy. I'm like, really? Did she really just say that? And then they did like some really lame segment where, you know, it was okay. And then Cenk had to just Russiagate. He had to Russiagate at the end of it. It's like pulling teeth to get these people to talk about Julian Assange. It's incredibly frustrating. I don't understand, especially we've had people, I've had friends of mine who are also in Action for Assange, who have talked to content creators who have straight up told them, we can't because it'll affect our clicks and subscriptions and it'll mess with our YouTube channel. And like, you're a coward. This is a big deal. I can't imagine not covering this and considering myself like a journalist or a news, like anywhere in the news sphere. If you're not covering this, there's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that what you were saying about how they want to have their cake and eat it too. They do that with everything. Like they do that. I mean, how they're not giving him constitutional rights, but they're charging him under the Espionage Act when he's not an American. Like they do that with war too, you know, like something, you know, that they'll not declare war and they'll say, oh, no, this is just a police action. But then when they have to justify doing something, they'll say, oh, no, well, this is time of war. So we have to do this. You know, I mean, there's just like no consistency at all with them. They don't I mean,
It's like the same way that we like talk about, Russia and their humanitarian rights violations. And are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, we have any moral high ground whatsoever to be talking about humanitarian rights? Are you joking? I mean, just the other day, Joe Biden said something about how a free press is like the foundation of democracy as he's torturing Julian Assange in Belmarsh right now. Like, he could end this today. But he wants to talk about press freedom. It's the hypocrisy is really gross. I think a lot more people are catching on to that, though. I think social media has a lot to do with that. It's a lot easier to call people out. And I think that's why they're so drastically ramping up their censorship and attempts to like silo people into echo chambers and all of that stuff. Because I think that's a huge part of why people there's been more awareness, I think, about what's going on.
Yeah, so I was never hopeful for Julian under Trump. I know a lot of people were. But do you think his chances are worse under Biden, or do you kind of look at them as the same? They're worse? Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's about the same, because it's really not about them. It's not about Joe Biden. It's not about Donald Trump. It's about the people who are actually in control. And the only thing that will save Julian Assange is mass public pressure, like a monumental amount of people standing up and saying no more. I don't know that we will get there. I hate to be pessimistic, but I'm a realist. And, I've been doing this for 2 years and it's still pulling teeth. And I've been heavily invested for over 2 years. It's still like pulling teeth, and it's still like, we're still dealing with the same. I will say that we have seen support grow. It's unbelievable. But it's still, I don't think that we're anywhere near where we need to be at. But I had no hope for the people who had hope for Julian Assange under Trump made me giggle, because he's the one that had him arrested.
I know.
TYT did that. They like tried to smear Julian Assange as like a Russian who was helping Trump, as Trump is the one who's having him tortured trying to kill him. That was a really terrible way of like paying Julian Assange back if he held Donald Trump. I had no hope for him under Donald Trump. I have no hope for him under Joe Biden. Joe Biden called him a high-tech terrorist, which is the exact same language that Mitch McConnell used. These people are all owned and operated by the exact same crew. And so again, it's going to take mass public pressure. There's not going to be like Joe Biden has like a crisis of conscience and decides to let Julian Assange free out of the goodness of his heart. That's never going to happen.
Yeah, I guess the only hope I have is, Bill O'Reilly was the biggest name on TV. You know, like he was the most successful TV show, especially amongst conservatives. And he was horrible on like everything. And now you've got Tucker Carlson, who's good on some things, and one of those things is Julian Assange, and he's speaking to millions of people, and he's unabashedly supportive of Julian Assange. I mean, if you had told me that Fox News number one show was going to be supporting Julian Assange a few years ago, I'd have been like, no, there's no way.
I know.
So I mean that's slightly
we hopeful, live in I the guess. Upside down. We live in the upside down. But yeah, Tucker Carlson, I'll get shit for saying this, but Tucker Carlson's amazing on Julian Assange. He has Glenn Greenwald on to talk about Julian Assange. He credits Jimmy Dore for changing his mind on Julian Assange. So big ups to Jimmy Dore that's how you do it. Like, Jimmy's not afraid to go talk to people he doesn't agree with. That's how you do it. Go and you present your case. And the case for Julian Assange, to me, is a no-brainer. This is a no-brainer. I think anybody who objectively looks at what's happening, there is no there's no question about what the right thing is, because you have to take Julian Assange out of the equation entirely, really. Yes, his life is worth fighting for and he's worth saving, but it's about so much more than that. It's so much bigger than Julian Assange. This really has nothing to do with Julian Assange as a person. He's being used as the example. Like, I liken him to like the proverbial head on a stake. He's the warning to everybody else. They don't want to shut him up. They want to shut all of us up. They want to level dissent. And that's what this is about. And so I think anybody who objectively looks at that, it becomes very clear what the proper position is on this, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're coming up on an hour, so I'll let you go here soon. But just tell us, what can we do to help Julian Assange? How can we follow what you're doing? And then anything else you want to plug or anything, just go for that right now.
Okay, so Julian Assange, I could talk about forever about ways that you can help him. Right now, his father and his brother are on a nationwide tour of the United States. I think that they were in Chicago today, but it's called the Home Run for Julian tour. You can find information about that at AssangeDefense.org. They also have a Twitter account. I think it's Assange Defense. But if you can, if there's an event near you, go to it. I met an amazing guy from the Libertarian Party. I'm going to go to a Libertarian conference in Florida in August, I think. He invited me to come to that to talk about Julian Assange. But yeah, if there's an event near you that you can make it out to, please do and support the tour. Spread the word about the tour. I also like to, if you can write to Julian, that's very beneficial. If you can imagine being in the Gitmo of the UK, 23 hours a day in your cell, you have very limited access to video conferencing or phone calls. You can't really participate in your own defense. You can't see your kids. He has two young children he hasn't seen since October. I'm sure you can imagine that his spirits are pretty low. And so there's a website called writejulian.com. I think it may be .org, but I think it's .com. But there, as I'm sure you can imagine, a prison has, you know, all kinds of regulations about what you can and can't send. So go on there. The address is on there. You can write to him. I don't know that I talked to his partner, Stella Morris. We don't know that he's getting all of his mail, but we do know that he is getting some. So if you have 5 minutes where you can just jot him a quick note, I think that that's very beneficial to him. But really what we need is people talking about it. I understand that it's a very complex case. It's very difficult to inform yourself about all aspects of it. And you will get a multitude of smears thrown at you. It's really hard to combat against all of them unless you're really well read on it. Caitlin Johnstone, who's an amazing writer, has an unbelievable article that's like 75 different smears that have been leveled against Julian Assange and the rebuttals to them. Bookmark that. It is it's an invaluable resource if you are trying to spread the word about Julian Assange. I think that everybody should have that in their arsenal. Other than that, we just really need people. I mean, really, we just need people talking about it. So if you're trying to support Julian Assange, really, we just need people to get the word out, talk about him as often as possible on your shows. If you're a content creator and you want to have me on your show to talk about Julian Assange, I will come on your show. I don't care where you fall on the political spectrum. If you want to cover Julian Assange, I will help you. If you want somebody cooler than me, I can find you somebody cooler than me, 100%. There's plenty of people out there who are more than willing to talk about Julian Assange and do whatever it takes. As far as myself, you can follow me on Twitter if you want. I'm there all the time at Sarcasm Stardust. I have a couple different shows, Facts on the Ground with my friend Jesse Zurwell. We just interviewed Tara Reid, who was amazing. And I have another show called Bitch with Comrade Misty. That's Wednesdays at 7. I just had Fiorella and Sky Daddy, if you're familiar with them, on Twitter, and also from Combo Couch. And that's a lot of fun. That's just like a rant show. That's just like where we just go to like let off steam. It's a lot of fun. And I think that's it. I'm really bad at remembering all the stuff to talk about, so I'm sure I forgot something, but oh well.
That's all good. Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on, and I'll have to have you back on to talk just about Julian Assange. We could do a whole 2 hours.
I could talk about Julian all day long, Reed.
Yeah. No, I mean, I appreciate that you care about issues and that you'll work with them. You'll work on them with anybody, because that's a fading mindset these days, and it's really annoying. You know, people are just trying to seclude themselves more and more, splinter movements more and more, and just isolate everybody so that we're all completely useless against the authoritarians who don't care about their differences, and they will all unite against us on, you know, extremely yeah. opposite.
You're not my aisle. Enemy. My enemy wears a $5,000 suit and sits in a boardroom.
Exactly.
You know, those are my enemies.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on. I have your Twitter in the description, so you guys can go follow her there. She's a good follow there. And yeah, we'll do this again. Thanks, Misty.
Thank you so much.